You're listening to a podcast by BI Norwegian Business School.
Welcome back to Stay Ahead, a BI Norwegian Business School podcast. This episode is part of the Strategy as Practice series, and today's episode will circle around the theme of innovation. Today, I have the pleasure of having with me Geir Hoy from Kongsberg. Actually, Kongsberg Group, where he has been with the company since 1993. He's been in several positions and been the CEO since 2016. Prior to that, he was the president and CEO of the Maritime Division. I also have with me Cheryl Winston-Smith, our Associated Dean of Master of Science Program in Entrepreneurship and Innovation. And she's also the Associate Professor at the Department of Entrepreneurship and Strategy, where she's been here since 2018. Her research interest is strategic management, entrepreneurship, and innovation. And she has her PhD from Harvard University and undergrad from Yale University. My name is Thomas Borgen, and I'm an industrial PhD candidate here at BI and will be your host today. Kongsberg Gruppen is an international technology group that supplies high technology systems to customers in the merchant marine, defense, aerospace, offshore, oil and gas industries, and renewable and utilities industries. Kongsberg actually has more than 200 years of history. It's actually founded in 1814 and was listed on the stock exchange in 1993. Actually, the same time as you joined Geir.
That's right.
Being the CEO of a company which is more than 200 years old, how do you find the balance of living with the history and not in the history, which a company that constantly needs to be in forefront of innovation and not the least reliability?
Yeah, I think so far, we are more than 200 years. I think we found that balance, being a technology company. We wouldn't be 200 years if we didn't find that balance. It's important for us to not live in the history. It's, of course, very important for us to live, looking forward in all our business areas. And as you also listed here, we are a very diversified company, but in the backbone of the company, I think, is technology, which is technology and competence, obviously, is the red thread since 1814.
Exactly, and that will be interesting to discuss further how you both take with you that history, and I think it's well said that when you're 200 years plus, it probably is the best answer to say we have constantly been on innovation, but I'm sure there is some humps on the way, and let's see what you have learned on the way to become more than 200 years.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's, I think everyone that lives by making innovations will experience, the things that is maybe not going exactly as you plan. And I think Kongsberg, we have our part of that in our history. At the same time, I think it's what is going to be important for a company which depend on continuously innovation is to make sure that you stop and not just continue if you are not delivering what you planned for. So I think it's crucial. Kongsberg, we are a company with a lot of engineers, a lot of ideas, and we need to make sure that we do the right prioritization. And then, of course, when we see that we are not meeting the planned activities or the planned business activities, then we should perhaps stop and have another look and make a redirection or actually stop the entire project.
And that we would like to explore more, how you actually do that in practice, so the listener can kind of be with you on some of the ideology or philosophy or even management practice you use to do that. But before we move on to that, Cheryl, being American, now being in Norway for a couple of years, and you're a specialist in entrepreneurship innovation, how is the differences between Norway and maybe US when it comes to that as a generic theme?
So I think one of the things that's really fascinating coming as an outsider is it gives you perspective both on your own culture that you're coming from as well as the culture that you're moving into. And I think in terms of innovation, one of the facets that really has struck me from the beginning is I think the stereotype of the U.S. is, you know, very entrepreneurial spirited and allowed to fail fast and start again, and just much more of a risk tolerance in the setting of both entrepreneurship and innovation. And I think when I came into the Norwegian ecosystem, that aspect of it really did strike me, that there, you know, I think there's a more hesitance towards taking risk, not an extreme aversion, but just more hesitant. And I see that in sort of the interaction between the financing environment. So harder for startups to get relatively easy to get the very early stage financing, but harder to get that next stage where the risk is still quite high, but the amount of capital needed is higher. And I think that this is something that, as we said, you know, a very strong science and technology and engineering, a lot of ideas. So I think it's that difference in sort of the ability to put those ideas out there and also to stand differently from others. You know, so I think one of the concepts I was introduced to by my students in entrepreneurship and innovation is the concept of Janteloven in Norway. And this idea of it's harder to just stand out and be contrarian and be better than everyone. And of course, for innovation, that's, you know, exactly what you need. I'd say on the other hand, I think one of the things that really impresses me and really contributes to the innovation culture in Norway is the, I would say, the tightness of the networks and the circles. And so within moving here in 2018, I was, you know, rapidly introduced to people, met people in, you know, throughout the corporates, throughout the entrepreneurial ecosystem, throughout the financing side. And I think that there's a culture of working together and collaboration that's really valuable in innovation.
And that's a cue for my next question, Geir.
Yes.
And as a large corporation, and you compromise, or you, at least you have divided your company in three business units: maritime, defense and aerospace, and digital. And you also have several partners you work with. What are the opportunities and challenges of operating in three, some would argue, very different business lines?
Yeah, I think it's obviously some differences there and some challenges being so diversified. And I would not recommend as an entrepreneur trying to start a company like Kongsberg. I think it's kind of a big chance to fail. But remember that Kongsberg was started back in 1814, and we have not, we have developed over these 200 years, and we have been, going from the defense side into the civilian side, the maritime business. We have been basically in digital since the digital was coming on the agenda. But then in 2016, we decided to consolidate our digital, generic digital efforts into Kongsberg Digital. So I think it's a kind of, for us, it has been to look at what we have in the group on technology and then see if there is a product or systems that can be used in one area. And you can, systems that have been developed for defense, can you use that for other markets? And that has happened a lot. I mean, a lot of our biggest market successes started in the defense side, and then we developed solutions for the civilian, the commodity commercial market. What we see now is that it's more and more going from the civilian side actually into the defense side, because you see defense are, you know, long-term development. It takes maybe from 5 to 10 years to develop big programs. In the commercial market, it's going much faster, especially in the digital area, but also other areas. So I think it's challenges to be a diversified company like Kongsberg, but it's also gives us a lot of opportunities to utilize technology in one area and then kind of do some more innovation or find it for another purpose, either it's in the civilian or in the defense area.
Very interesting. But do you then have a central R&D or innovation department, which kind of develop a core basic technology, or is it more individual and then you fuse it into the other divisions as there is some sort of governance around it?
No, we don't have a central development. What we try to do in Kongsberg, and I think we have more to go on that side, but what we try to do is, you know, to make the technologies and the basis available for the entire group. Obviously, there is some limitation on the defense side if it's a kind of secret, then there must be some modification before we can use it in the civilian side. But out with that, I think we are making every technology available for the entire group. And then we have one particular part, which is, I think, is important, has been important for Kongsberg in many years and going to be even more important going forward. And that is the technology forum. We get all the, let's say, top technology guys in our group, and they are getting together regularly, discussing technology available, discussing the technology trends going forward. What kind of technology trends do Kongsberg need to focus on? What kind of competence do we need to take in use new technology coming ahead? And then they make their own assessment of the technology situation. And then they bring it back to their, let's say, their core. And then you can start coming up with the new ideas, and you see the new technology coming online. How can we use that to solve the, or innovate or take the product to the next stage?
Super interesting. But you also mentioned defense, and defense has kind of come up higher up on the agenda lately of very unfortunate reasons of the Ukraine war. But you also said that now actually the civilian innovation also fuses into the defense. But is there a challenge of having defense and maritime within the same group when it comes to technology transfer? Or can you see it as a kind of, listen to you, it's actually an advantage, but you have to be strict on certain issues, to put it that way?
Yeah, necessarily. There is some limitation of what kind of technology you can straight up use for the civilian purpose, obviously. But I think a lot of the defense budgets have continuously increased. I think more and more nations see that, you know, why should we put in place these development programs, which takes years, you know, and you can actually go out in the commodity market and you can find the technology which is kind of beyond what they have been thought about. And they don't need to reinvent the wheel, so to say. So I think the defense forces, what for them, what is important is to get the boots on the ground fast. And then why not utilize, let's say, the commercial available technology, and then you militarize it. Because you need to probably put a layer on some of these technologies to get it to work for the defense forces. But again, I think what is important for a group like Kongsberg is actually to get these technology guys together, and they are, because we know our industries and we know what the challenge is. And then if you know what the challenge is, you know also what to fix. So put these guys together, talk with the operative guys, the guys in the operation, and you put the technology guys together, and then you start evaluating how can we solve these challenges. And I think that is one of the reasons why Kongsberg has been successful, is that we are very closely working with our customer. We work very closely with our supply chain, because the innovation is happening on several places, not only in Kongsberg, but also our, let's say, supply chain. And then we discuss the challenges that our customer facing.
What I think you're saying very, very smoothly is that one thing is technology and be able to transfuse and transmit technology across, but you also need domain knowledge.
Yes, yes.
And that's, without having both, you will not go anywhere. So I think that's a very interesting. Charles, I know you also have studied Kongsberg before we're meeting the CEO now. And you've been fascinating about the company and listening to the CEO here. What's your reflection?
Yeah, so really interesting. I think, you know, some of what strikes me and sort of very much resonates with what we know in research and some of my own research and other research, but just thinking about this idea of the tech forum and bringing people together across the different components. And as you said, you wouldn't necessarily start the company from scratch with these three different areas, but the way that they do interface with each other and having intentional mechanism for being able to do that. An industry where I've done a lot of work has been medical devices, and that's actually somewhat similar in that you have a lot of different areas, different systems coming together, but sometimes the impetus for some of the biggest breakthrough innovations comes from taking from one area to another and what we think of as sort of knowledge recombination. Mm-hmm. So I'm that's something that I'm very interested in. And then also just this idea of innovating in conjunction with your customers and supply chain. And this, some of what we know in research, some of my research in user innovation and sort of more open innovation, where this idea of being able to scan the horizons for ideas that are coming together, but then also reflecting on what you're saying, also the fact that you know your areas, your tech guys, your tech people know their business, they know the technologies that are emerging and the technologies that are needed. So it's that combination and integration, I think, of ideas coming across domains and coming from outside the company and then being able to pull them in and integrate mm-hmm. them.
I think, if I may, I just add a comment. A good example, I think, is Kongsberg Digital. I mean, we are not the biggest. We don't have most of the AI people or machine learning people, but we have some very good people. But I think the domain knowledge of the industry that mm-hmm. we are involved in, combined with the at least the capacity we have today in AI and machine learning, we have been in the maritime business for 50 years. We know the marine operation. Mm-hmm. We know, the challenges that our customer are facing out there in the marine industry, whether that is in the Navy or it's in the civilian, civilian shipping. And then we combine that domain knowledge with the new competence in AI and machine learning. Mm-hmm. I think we are set up for a success in a better way than a straightforward AI company or a SaaS company based on only the software side of it. Yeah. So it's and I think that has been one of the reasons why Kongsberg has been successful. Try to understand the domain knowledge as much as you can, because then you can kind of go back and you can sit and start thinking about how can technology help them solve the challenges they are facing.
We talk about innovation, and a part of innovation is also, let's say, having the entrepreneurship, the willingness to explore. But in your view, is innovation a structured process? Is it a chaotic process? Or how do you create that culture of constant innovation, improvement, but at the same time have resilience and substance. How do you find that as from the management perspective?
I think before I was coming here, and I went into Wikipedia actually to look at how do you define the innovation. But actually, it's a process. It's all about getting an idea of something, and you start process of going towards that product. I mean, if you look at the product lines in Kongsberg overall, it's based on a new idea, creating a product, and then you create a product line. If you understand, we could take one example, dynamic positioning. I know Kongsberg is quite famous for the dynamic positioning, which was crucial for us to develop the oil and gas industry in the northern North Sea. This was actually a defense idea, to make a dynamic positioning, thinking about a defense problem. And then we were sitting there, and then we heard about, the oil sector, how to put divers down there and secure them. And then we start thinking that, okay, why do not we create a software which helps the vessel keep that position, bullseye position, so that you can put the divers into the water in several hundred meters in a safe way. So actually, something coming from the totally different side, actually the defense side, ending up being the most successful, let's say, business success in Kongsberg Maritime, at least. So it's a kind of, I think that is perhaps the model that we have used in many cases in Kongsberg. We have the same with the autonomous underwater vehicle created for the defense part, but it's also extremely important for it today for the surveillance of the sea column. We survey the seabed. We can use it for surveillance. We can use it for obviously for military purpose, but I think this is the way we do innovation across the different business areas in Kongsberg.
Very, very interesting. And Cheryl, when we look at the literature and what we know from research, it kind of confirms what Guy says, that innovation is a structured process, isn't it?
Yeah, so I think that in both in the literature and in research, what we see is that innovation has different elements to it. And I think it's interesting that you commented that you were searching for a definition of innovation before coming today, because it's one of those concepts where inherently we have certain ideas of what it means, but at the same time, there's so many different elements of it. So if I was doing a formal definition of innovation, we can think about bringing new products and services to market. But of course, we know that there's so much that goes in before that, right? So in some of my work, I've looked at, patenting and the path from patenting to actually bringing it to market, and thinking about the ways that, bringing in ideas at different parts in it. So I think, listening to the feedback between defense to maritime and from commercial technology into defense technology and sort of these multiple feedback loops, all of that involves a knowledge gathering process and a knowledge integration process. And to me, what I see in terms of successful innovation is this ability to both have a core and a sense of the core technologies, the core ideas, the core trends going forward, and the market needs in conjunction with the technology needs, but at the same time having antenna to pick up on other possibilities, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe it's that we're developing this on the defense side, but these are the applications that are evolving in maritime. And I think this is something that, and we see in research across different industries, where it's these serendipitous connections sometimes, and sometimes serendipitous, but in a structured way. So it's almost an oxymoron, right? It's having built in the ability to integrate what you don't expect, but being aware in advance that you need to do that. Mm. Mm. So on both ends.
I think a lot of our students believes that there's just a good idea which is needed to be found, and that's the innovation. And I think we all agree that's slightly more complicated than that.
Yeah, I think so. But if I may, back to the entrepreneurship, because I think that is very interesting. And I think you're quite right that it's a big difference from US to Norway and perhaps also Europe. And Kongsberg, today we are big enough to kind of, you know, finance our own, let's say, development. We use 10%-ish of our revenues, including also, fortunately, some customers' money. But in big, maybe 10% of our revenues we use every year for let's say, innovation and technology development. But obviously for an entrepreneur today in Norway, as we say, it's easy to get the initial money, or at least easier. But to really get the enough funding to bring up the new ID, the product or the services, but then you should actually take it to the market. And I think that is one of the biggest challenges, unless you have only, let's say, a national product. But if you're going to go internationally, that's where a lot of the entrepreneurships fail. Yeah. And I think that is an obligation that Kongsberg, as a kind of bigger company, well-established infrastructure in 40 countries, we try to bring our supply chain and our value chain together with us out in the international market. And then we have done quite a few times very successful. And one example is Kitron. Initially, they were 80% of their revenue was Kongsberg revenue. Today, and 20% was out with Kongsberg. Today, that is actually the opposite. It is 20% Kongsberg and 80% third parties. Yeah. So I think that is a responsibility for Kongsberg. And I think it's also valuable for Kongsberg because we got innovation from our value chain, and we utilize that into our systems and our products and our services. So it's both a responsibility, but it also, let's say, help Kongsberg to continuously be in forefront of either the technology or the services that we are supplying the market.
A lot of the research that I'm doing currently is looking at these interactions between corporates such as Kongsberg and startups, and some of that is through formal mechanisms, formal transactions such as corporate venture capital, where the corporates are taking equity stakes in a portfolio of bets of in startup companies and ideas, or corporate accelerators such as the Techstars Accelerator that Kongsberg had been part of. But kind of thinking about this in terms of not just the sharing of ideas, but also this, as you're saying, this ability to sort of get those early stage ideas to market and to scale them from the entrepreneurial setting into something that can actually work in a big corporate environment.
Absolutely.
From the management point of view, how do you actually measure innovation? Can innovation be measured? Or how do you look from, because you can go in theoretically in the wrong direction, but how do you actually sit at your office or with the board to measure this?
That's a good question. And I think, I don't think we measure it, it's not so important to measure it very accurately. I think because that can put some limitation on the innovation, degree. But we did a study, I think it's a few years ago, we did a study because it's not so easy to see, how much innovation power does Kongsberg have. It happens innovation in Kongsberg every day, because it's not that we launch a new product every day, but we are continuously developing our existing products. And then we add capabilities, we add applications, and that is actually innovation continuously. So I can't remember exactly figures from that study that we did, But I think you needed somewhat 500 entrepreneurships to be on the same level as Kongsberg was in a year. And I think that tells a lot of the innovation power that Kongsberg has as a group overall. Don't take the figures 100%, but we have a lot of innovation power. But I think it's more than, let's say, launching a product, and that is maybe what people from outside can see is that when you have a big launch session, you know, you come up with a new product going this or that. But we continuously, as I say, if you take another example, we started the missile production or the missile development actually back in the early 70s, beginning of the late 60s, early 70s. What we are delivering today is actually based on the missiles technology back then, but of course it's a totally different missile that we are delivering today. It's continuously developed, and it's the fifth generation missile today, the only fifth generation missile today that we can deliver from Kongsberg with that type of capabilities. So we wouldn't be there without a continuously challenge ourselves on the capability and the capacity.
But that's a very interesting theme, Charles. This, and I don't think there is one hard line between breakthrough innovation and continuous improvements. There is some gray lines, and both are very important for corporations, isn't it? That's also what I understand you research on.
Yes, very much so. And sort of this idea of you know, sort of, I love what you said about in terms of, you know, you're coming up with ideas every day and innovating every day, but that doesn't mean a product every day by any means. And the, you know, sort of in a sense, the big product launches are, you know, that's the end point more than the starting point, but it's what the public sees as this is the innovation. And I think, you know, one of the things that I've looked at has been on the in my research has been looking at this interaction between sort of this continuous incremental innovation where you really need to do that, as you're saying, you know, constantly. Mm. And it's very much a process of you know, ideas and taking in the feedback from customers, from the value chain, from other parts of the company, but at the same time having the ability to be looking towards not what's needed in 6 months, but what's needed in 18 months and what's needed in you know, several years down the line. And often this goes back to what I was saying earlier. This is where a lot of times where we see the knowledge recombination coming into play. And so seeing what's coming from you know, the example of you know, bringing in the machine learning and AI in digital. Well, this is something that's true across industries. It's something that we see in energy. It's something we see in medical devices, where it's things that were being developed in one in particular academic areas, such as computer science. A lot of the early developments and things that were being deployed in other industries, but become extremely important in terms of breakthrough innovations in other industries. You know, and this is something that I see, you know, in some of my work where I look at relationships between patents and ultimate products that are released and being able to actually using some of the machine learning in that, but being able to kind of see the process where these ideas are coming from and the diversity of both within the company and from startups, but also oftentimes from users, and how that actually it relates to or ties to products that are brought to market.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm now the CEO of the group, I'm still in every day when I go to office. I, you know, going around in Kongsberg and I see. I'm surprised that we are doing this this, and you know, you see new things almost every day, but I think again, it's the ability to obviously we need to make our investors happy, so we need to spend our research money well, but I think at the same time you need to have a certain degree of letting the good ideas develop to a certain stage, and then you need to start prioritize. And then you need a business plan. You need to do an assessment of the market out there. And you need to actually, let's say, qualify with your potential clients that that this is an innovation that is needed in the market that you are targeting. Otherwise, I think you get only a good idea and less revenue on it.
It's a classical staging or gate through, so you have to go through the various gates.
Yeah.
But innovation is a positive word. But innovation is not always associated with success. And there is a discussion out there if you should even celebrate failures to get the innovation going. What's your reflection of finding that right balance of innovation, or keep an innovation culture which is creative enough, but within the boundaries which you as a corporate and as a CEO can live with?
Yeah, that's a tricky question. But I think, you know, every idea and every development of an, let's say, a process of an innovation, I think it's so important for us, even if you say that, okay, this innovation we did not succeed with. But I mean, the process, in the process, you have a lot of learning that you can reuse in the next, let's say, ID creating and innovation process. So you should never, let's say, misuse a failure of innovation. Take the learning. Why did it fail? And then bring it into the next process of innovation.
Yeah, I think, it's really interesting because one of the, sayings that's so common in the world of entrepreneurship and venture capital is thinking about strikeouts and home runs. Mm. And the example I love is Babe Ruth, so one of the all-time baseball greats, the third highest home run record in baseball history going back to the 1800s. And he was asked, how does he get so many home runs? And he said, I swing big and I miss big. And his record is something like 770 home runs, career home runs. But he struck out over 1,300 times. He struck out almost twice as many times as he got home runs. And the reason the analogy is so powerful is because you can't get home runs, you can't get things out of the ballpark unless you're willing to fail. Mm. And they're just tied to each other. And so I think this idea of being able to learn from failure and being able to, I really like what you said about, you know, never misusing a failure, you know, being able to learn along the process. At the same time, I think what we see in research is just that on the one hand, we know that it's so essential to be able to experiment, to have small failures, what I was mentioning before in terms of my research on corporate venture capital and thinking about sort of these portfolio of bets on ideas, most of which will never go anywhere for the corporate that's investing, but knowing that a few of them will, right? And and sort of knowing up front that most of these are interesting ideas that might not be the right fit for the company, or they might be too early. There's too much market risk, too much technical risk. Mm-hmm. But I think the other question I have as you were talking is just thinking about how do you make it possible within the company to have these failures? Because it's one thing at the company level to recognize it's important to tolerate failure. But at the same time, you know, as you said, you have investors. Investors really don't like failure. How do you make it okay within the company to try ideas and then say, okay, well, this idea is not panning out. We're going to stop it. But that's okay. That's part of the process. Mm.
I heard one I would say famous coach in Norway. He said that if you're going to be good at something, you have to practice, a lot. And I think it's the same with innovation. You know, you need to allow to a certain degree innovation, and then you also need to accept failures. It has to be. You have to get some home runs. Otherwise, you will not survive. So for us, I think it's you start a project. there is always a kind of assessment in front. You do an assessment of the customer needs, the market potential, and then you make a business plan and then you get started. And obviously, a program that needs a lot of resources to succeed, it's kind of more, we take that more kind of serious when we make a decision process.
Right.
And then you need to have this kind of, what you call it, you need to actually go in and check, are we on plan regularly? You have these milestones where you have a gateway, gatekeeper, so that you just continue and don't stop it. Because I think that is probably some experience that we have done. If you are not on top of it, you can continue for a long period of time, spending a lot of resources, and it's deemed to fail, actually. So you need to have a process so that you follow up and you have this gatekeeping along the way. When it comes to this more incremental innovation, I think this is nothing I follow up every day. I think you need to allow the divisions and the departments to do that kind of development or innovation regularly, continuously. I don't hear about this at all. But then you have to look at the overall figures and see that, you know, we are in the budget of what you are spending money on. And I think one thing is new innovation, another thing is maintenance. And also try to split out this, because to maintain something, that is not innovation. But you need to know what is bringing you forward with your product or with your services. That you need to measure and not mix everything into one lump sum, because then you cannot kind of monitor, where you are moving.
It almost sounds to me, and this is something that I've learned since coming to Norway, this idea of, sort of trust your skis. I, do a lot of cross-country skiing. I have kids skiing competitively. And this idea that you have the people in place, you have the ideas in place, you have the concepts, the incremental innovation is proceeding along. Mm. And sort of having trust in the process, at the same time, you're constantly building the innovation muscles, and it's this idea of practice every day. But it sounds like this idea of really kind of knowing that you know what you're doing, and having the ability to monitor, to correct course when it's off course, that there will definitely be some wipeouts and maybe even some broken bones along the way. Mm. But at the same time, that this is the path and that you've been successful doing it. So it seems like that interesting mixture of following what you're doing, but also being able to correct and monitor.
Yeah, I think it's important to differentiate between incremental on the product, at least from my position. And then, of course, to start a big innovation program, obviously.
But what I hear is it's about building a sustainable business model innovation. So it's a part of the fundamental of being a long-term viable business, where innovation is a central part. And what I hear also is one should be cautious to separate that as something very individual, but it's a natural part of running a business through generations to be relevant towards the clients in the structured process. That's some kind of the things I'm hearing you saying here. But, building that culture, to use that word, you need capabilities. How do you recruit, develop, and nurture those capabilities?
Kongsberg is, we have a lot of technicians and engineers and so on. And I think we had this competition recently with some of the academia in Norway, and one of the criteria there, which we evaluate as a part of the, let's say, if you are the winner, or is actually the mix of team, the competition of the team. Kongsberg has a lot of Kubernetes.
Cybernetics.
And basically everything we can do, you can relate to cybernetics, a lot at least. But I think to solve tomorrow's challenges, I think we need, you know, mix the competences much more than we do today. It can even come from other industries. I mean, get the ideas from other industries which are not having the same problem, basically, but at least, you know, start thinking about, you know, finding other ways of, for example, a service.
Right.
So to also be, you know, brave enough, I would say, to go out your own, outside your own business, and to get ideas from these guys, bring it back to your own organization, mix the team with engineers, with the finance people, with design people, with the physics. I mean, I think that is how we're going to solve tomorrow's challenges, is actually to combine different competence together. And that we have seen in the competition now is quite interesting to see, is actually the most successful teams are these guys that are, at least they are more creative, I would say, thinking about, you know, solving the tomorrow's problems. So it's quite interesting.
If I could just say, I actually, this is very resonant with some research I've been doing on founding teams and having, you know, large-scale data on people's backgrounds. And if it's science and technical background, and we separate out technical from coding in some cases, and then also whether people have business backgrounds and also, again, kind of whether it's entrepreneurial background or just or a more standard background. And but I find exactly what you're saying, that it's the teams where you have a mixed group of ideas coming together that you get the most success in terms of, for startups, in terms of being able to launch, to raise funds, and ultimately, you know, sort of growth over time.
Mm.
But very resonant with that.
We need to wrap up. But, you know, one of our roles in society is to educate graduates to yourself. We don't educate engineers, but more commercial graduates. Any recommendation to us how we should make our students relevant to join Kongsberg?
I think you are already highly relevant. As I say, Kongsberg is starting to be a sizable company, and we need people from all type of backgrounds and competence and. Obviously, we have a lot of finance people. We have, but I think you know, looking at, we have science people, we have cybernetics, we have engineers, we have electro, we have automation, system engineering, and I think that's the beauty of this, is actually to combine these people, because especially if you look at. If you look at perhaps one of the most important thing, like for Kongsberg going forward, if we're going to stay alive in 200 years more, I think we need to, I don't think, I know that we need to create Kongsberg going from today's position. We need to be a sustainable company by all means. I mean, not only economically, but also in the product and the system and the services that we do, they have to be sustainable in a sustainable way, so to say. So then we need to, as I say, continue to mix our competence in a good way, whether that is in defense or in maritime or in digital. We need all these kind of competence brought together, and we need to rethink how we make product. What kind of product we make, you know, what kind of solutions that we are creating out there, and I think we are moving that way now. We are in the forefront of the new concepts when it comes to in the shipping industry. We are definitely taking steps into the space with our space programs. Digital, we are, you know, one of the leaders within the digital tools for our core industries like the maritime business and the oil and gas business, utility business, and so on. So we need definitely people from here in BI. And I think if I should start my education again today, I would definitely take INDUC. I think that is a favorable education.
Degree,
because you combine the finance with the technical part, and it's really... So every finance people that is happy with or like are interested in technology, you should start working with Kongsberg.
Yeah, yeah. So basically saying we should combine some sense of engineering, understanding of physics, understanding with business acumen.
And digital.
And not at least digital. I think it's all about digital to some extent going forward. But Carol, Cheryl, now listening to the CEO of Kongsberg Group here, who is unquestionably a global technology powerhouse on many instances. What's your reflection listening to this?
So I think it's been a fascinating conversation. And, I'm just very much struck by the forward-looking nature of, I think, kind of thinking back to where we started the conversation about living with the history and the legacy, but not in it. And I think that's been the theme that that's really, I would say, that red thread throughout the conversation today has really been about where things are going, the combinations across the different areas that Kongsberg's operating in, but also bringing in these ideas from outside. And I think also just this constant constant moving forward, but this ability to really have an eye on the breakthroughs in the future. So moving, I think, as you're saying, moving from defense into space and bringing in these different combinations of competences. Mm. But really this idea of really the constant evolution, I would say, and moving forward. I'd also say wearing my hat as Associate Dean for the Entrepreneurship and Innovation Program, I can see a lot of room for graduates that have exactly the sort of ability to think across disciplinary boundaries.
Absolutely.
I think that was extremely well said. And just my observation, I think Kongsberg seems to be very well placed to also continue for the next 200 years. With that, nothing else for me to say, but thank you to both of you. And I hope your listener enjoyed this conversation.
This is a BI production. Listen to more podcasts. Go to bi.no/podcasts.